Welcome back to episode 233. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Well, I think this week can be, I guess you could portray it as mildly white pilling, perhaps, or encouraging. What we're seeing now is what appears to be the ongoing collapse, or I guess the planned demolition of the COVID regime, the COVID narrative. There's a lot of speculation on what's really going on here. New agenda that maybe they've we kind of touched on it last week, or they might have decided they've there's too much resistance. They went for too much too soon. Now they got to retrench, regroup, and maybe plan another attack. I guess trying to plumb the thoughts of the psychopathic elite or self-proclaimed elite that run the world or presume the right to run the world is difficult for us. I guess us people aren't adept in such matters. We just have to peer in and see if we can get an idea of what's going on by reading the news and see what's going on around us, which is increasingly difficult because so much is fake or manipulated. But nevertheless, there was some good news. I think Great Britain, the Czech Republic, and Israel back away from vaccine reports. This is by Deborah Hein, I think, for American Greatness website. Great Britain, the Czech Republic, and Israel are backing away from COVID vaccine mandates amid increasing evidence that the leaky vaccines are making a pandemic worse. It's becoming harder to deny the glaring obvious facts that COVID infection rates are increasing worldwide in proportion with the rate of vaccination. And that injections have a dreadful adverse side effects, which may be contributing to marked increase in all-cause deaths. It's a pretty good summation of what we're witnessing now. A lot of the growing awareness that the vaccines are failing, it should not be surprised that Moderna and BioN stocks are now have dropped 8 to 10% this week, 60% since August. The hedge funds have finally realized there will be no fourth shot, quipped Alex Berenson on Substack. I love this. Hedge funds. Funny you follow the money, you can find out what's going on. That's interesting. I guess it's an investigative tool, forensic tool, I guess, in these things. And Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced on Wednesday that the government will discontinue mandatory COVID vaccine passports and masks in England, citing falling infection levels as the reason for behind the move. Speaking in Parliament today, Johnson announced that the Plan B restrictions issued to control the spread of Omicron will be allowed to expire on March 24th and possibly sooner, Cambridge News reported. Our scientists believe it's likely that the Omicron wave has now peaked nationally, the prime minister said. He told the House of Commons, that's what he told the House of Commons. He also said that he's going to leave it up to people's good judgment, which is, we've been arguing for two years. Thank you, Prime Minister. similar in Czech Republic, there's a new government in the Czech Republic. They dismissed the previous government's vaccine mandate requiring older adults. I think that mandate was just announced, was it a month or two ago? Backing away from it. Interesting, we'll see what happens across the border in Austria there. So the previous government led by Prime Minister Andrei Babis released an order on early December, making vaccinations mandatory for people age 60 and over, as well as medical personnel, police officers, firefighters, and medical students. It was due to take effect in March, but the Babis administration was replaced later in December by a new government formed by five parties, led by Prime Minister Peter Fiala. We've agreed that the vaccination against COVID-19 won't be mandatory, Fiala said. Scroll down here. In Israel, the Jewish state recently passed 2 million COVID cases since the pandemic began and notched a record-breaking 72,120 new cases on Tuesday, according to data published on Wednesday by the health ministry. Of course, Israel had the most aggressive vaccine policy and they're getting the most breakthrough cases, which leading them to conclude that the vaccines don't work as advertised. Professor Cyril Cohen, the head of the immunology at Bar Ilan University and a senior vaccine advisor to the Israeli government, is calling for the country's vaccine green passport system to be phased out as it is no longer relevant in the Omicron era. So that's how they're spinning it, I suppose. That basically the virus mutated, it's just not relevant anymore. The finance minister, Avigdor Lieberman, also called for the end of the green pass proof of COVID vaccinations to enter certain locations, according to I-24 News. So with that, we're seeing, I guess we had our own you know, the Supreme Court ruled last week that the Biden mandates were unconstitutional. Various companies like Starbucks are announcing they're getting rid of their vaccine. They can't administer it. It's just too much for them to administer. It's not necessary. Starbucks reverses this drop in the vaccine mandate for all its employees. And that's a woke corporation. That's interesting. So, Joe, what we're seeing here is sort of, I guess, a retreat and maybe a collapse of the COVID narrative. What say you?
Well, it's impossible, as you point out, to really know what's going on, in fact. But I think some conjectures are permitted. Incidentally, I was going to add Ireland to the list of nations that did the about turn. Ireland announced late Friday that it was just abandoning the whole thing, as best I can determine from the press releases. And this is just shocking because the immediately prior correspondence from the government is that you would be in a slave state forever.
Yes.
Until there was no COVID in the solar system. So then immediately after this, the next response is, well, we're done with all this. This is behind us. In the UK, there had been rumors this was going to happen, but they were mainly related to Boris Johnson's decadent, debauched partying that had been photographed. I don't know if you're familiar with this little episode.
Was that the Christmas party?
Yeah, and so he was, frolicking with no clothes on and no masks, of course. So this some people thought was a dual standard. So there was some disconcert, kind of people were upset about this. So they were thinking that it was all kind of moving in this direction. But then the UK statement, particularly how, kind of total the retreat was, it wasn't piecemeal. They just said, no, we're done with it. In fact, and I'm not sure about this, but it may be the case that you can just fly into the UK now and not get, arrested if you don't have a vaccination passport. I'm not sure about that. That's what I've been told. Anyway, so this is quite amazing. And the question is what is the malevolent purpose of this maneuver, which it's hard to imagine this is, a spontaneous, change of heart. I think there is a possibility that seems coherent anyway, which is that the all causes death statistics are really starting to come into just impossible to ignore visibility. In the United States, there's just a number of DAs, different state DAs, that are starting to look into this, that they've announced that they're doing investigations.
Well, that's interesting. So make a criminal matter out of it.
Well, for sure. And the thing is that I think they could certainly control one investigation, but when you have multiple investigations, it becomes very, very difficult, I suspect, to keep all of the plates in the air, so to speak, because... Yeah. If you start getting contradictory positions, then that will even pique the public's interest more. This will equal more investigation. So I have a feeling, my sense is that this will come out over the next 30 days that, well, there is a genocide going on. Now, I think that because of that, this withdrawal is a kind of an attractive place for the governments to put themselves because they can say, well, gee, we've been always objective about the virus. I mean, we've withdrawn all the mandates. It's a shame that the vaccine, manufacturers screwed up and killed everyone. You see what I mean? In other words, this may be like the best blind for different governments to hide behind. They can just say, look, we're going to it's like the UK's absurd statement that we're going to trust the population. I mean, if you caught that statement,
imagine that.
We haven't trusted them for 2 years, but now we're going to trust them. So something is up. And I think it's probably just the fact that they have got the injection into about as many people as they can. From here on out, it's almost just hand to hand fighting. And they may be in a position where they can just sit back, let the die-off occur, let the financial world collapse, and whatever is left, they figure they can just mop up. And so this actually might be an attempt to create tranquility, to just sort of calmly accept what is about to become clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was it's interesting, maybe perhaps what they call ladder climbing is when a prosecutor will go after a lower level crony and use him to go after the upper level to get the to catch the big fish. It'd be interesting. It'd be nice to think that maybe some of this has happened. Will they use the government is now trying to admit that mistakes were made or there was fraud involved. Now they want to point the finger at a pharmaceutical company or an oligarch here and there, but maybe that's just a fantasy.
Well, I actually have a correspondence with someone who had been in a large company who had been forced to take the jab. He and I had a correspondence in terms of how to delay it. He wasn't able to, has to put bread on the table for his family, took the jab, had a bad reaction to it. And now he finds that the constitutional basis or the legal basis, the judicial basis has been taken away. And so I got further correspondence and he was saying, well, you know, I'm thinking about suing. And I said, absolutely. This is a great time. There should be millions of lawsuits.
Yeah.
So that was early in the week. Later in the week, he got back to me. He said, you know, I'm too late. I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, I've contacted all the attorneys I know and they're all absolutely swamped with these kinds of lawsuits. They're not taking anymore.
Yeah. And that's why Starbucks. Canceled.
Yeah. So my point is that this is perfect. The court should just be a tsunami of lawsuits now against these corporations. They should all be put out of existence. All of the corporations that mandated their employees before there had been a clarity of a judicial reality, all of the ones that made the people take the jabs. And now, it's getting clearer and clearer that the people who took the vaccine have the sword of Damocles hanging over their head in terms of the immune system deteriorating over time. They should also 100% and all these companies should just be put out of existence and replaced by companies who have, you know, kind of a structure of courage in terms of their relationship with the government. They won't just be pushed around and frightened into, sacrificing their employees if the president, mentions that he's unhappy, that they're not wearing masks or something. Anyway, so the future is really, these will be exciting times, Tim, because the judicial wave is not yet really taking place. The clarity of the genocide is not yet in place, but I think it is coming. I don't think they can really hide these facts much longer. And I also think that the efficacy of the vaccine now, at the level of my exercise club, which has, really is pretty pro-Magnan in terms of its, kind of intellectual level. It's just very dim, they're more into other things. Anyway, so they are now aware. The people there are aware that, there's something wrong with the vaccine. It didn't do what it's supposed to. It's like, how come I have to keep taking these boosters? There's starting to be this kind of groundswell. So I think we're going to certainly win on the issue through time. I mean, certainly, the independent media's position on whether or not, the lockdown was a good idea, whether or not the vaccines are safe. I mean, we're going to win these issues. The question is like, what will be left of, our population and civilization to take advantage of it with?
Yeah, there's an interesting story out of Australia with tennis star Novak Djokovic. Djokovic. He was deported from Australia for violating its vaccine mandates, although he had been allowed in knowingly he was, quote, unvaccinated. And so they held him for a little while, and then they deported him. I guess he can't take part in the Australian Open there. It wasn't because he was against the COVID-19 vaccine, the fact that he was vocal about it. And the government admitted it, saying that he presented a threat to public safety because he was expressing opinions that compromised, the validity or legitimacy of the government's anti-COVID program, which includes, of course, forced vaccinations. So they admitted to deporting him because of his particular views, not because he presented a particular threat to this. So it pretty much tells you how fragile and weak their argument was when they can't even contend with a tennis player's arguments, or a quarterback's arguments, right? I mean, it's...
Yeah, and they can't. Where is the public debate? I mean, these are just critical, I mean, absolutely fundamental critical issues to everyone's existence. So there should be all kinds of ideas that are being permitted. And, you know, and by the way, the government's vision of reality has never been correct all throughout this entire thing. They have to change it every 2 weeks. You know, it's going to be a lockdown for 2 weeks, you know, so they should be open to new ideas, but they aren't, and they won't be. And it's always going to be propaganda. And even the thing with Novak, or Novax, as he's referred to, is just a hard edge propaganda, because they're really just saying we're afraid. And actually, in some of the communications, public communication about the situation, they kind of were clear about this, that they're just worried that even the discussion, if there is such a thing, you know, with him or with his representatives in public, would create vaccine hesitancy or booster hesitancy at this point, you know.
Booster hesitancy, yeah.
They can't talk about these things. They have to just keep intimidation, threats, you know, as the way to get people to take them going forward. And it's interesting, isn't it, that the problem that the oligarchs have with the vaccine death shot is that it is going to take a few of them, it looks like. Perhaps not. Perhaps there are long-term effects that are really going to be horrendous. But the in terms of their political or immediate problem is that you would have thought it would have gotten easier, right? Because the second go around, you'd have all of the people already vaccinated. They would just line up for the boosters. In fact, it's gotten worse, because I think a larger tranche refused to be vaccinated, refused to buy into the propaganda that this was good for us. So that they have a much larger tranche to deal with on that side, who are much more intellectually armed to the teeth against the sophistry, you know, and the propaganda. But moreover, they're starting to get rebellion inside the vaccinated, you know, tranche. Those guys are not taking the booster. In California, it's actually kind of a scandal that they just cannot get people to take the booster. They don't know what to do. They're trying to maybe have another like hamburger and French fries roll out to see if that'll encourage people to take it. But they're just, you can see, because they do give public data on this, that the uptake of the boosters, it's not even close to being half of what the original vaccination was. And so, you know, the problem to get compliance is getting worse. And now if you add the insurance actuarial data, where it starts seeing, well, gee, you know, people are dying off at a high rate because you're taking the vaccine, it'll just come to a stop. And then, I mean, I think that's why, you know, getting back to my original point, that this is like maybe the governments want to be in a position of we're on your side. You know, well, yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, we're post all lockdowns, all vaccine mandates, and we'll try to come up some way to get the therapy you need to keep in existence while the side effects of the vaccine start to hammer you.
Nevertheless, Bill Gates is praising Australia's policies. Out of LifeSite News, while arguing that the COVID-19 jabs prevent severe disease and death very well, Gates acknowledged during a Twitter Q&A that they will still allow infection and the duration appears to be limited. Billionaire philanthropist Microsoft founder Bill Gates promoted yearly coronavirus injections and praised Australia's totalitarian COVID response while admitting that the current jabs don't stop transmission. the vaccines we have prevent severe disease and death very well, citation needed, but they are missing two key things, Gates told Professor Devi Sridhar of the University of Edinburgh during a question and answer session on January 11th. First, someone ever bothered asking him, says, why are we listening to a lousy software salesman? Anyway, that's been an interesting question. No one ever asked that question, right? First, they still allow infections, breakthrough, we were told that wasn't the case, though, and the duration appears to be limited, Gates said, adding, we need vaccines to prevent reinfection, have many years of duration. Okay, that's interesting. Do they have those, though? Despite nearly early promises that the experimental drugs would stop transmission of the virus and provide lasting and protection, Gates is not alone in admitting that the jabs have failed to do so. So why are we listening to them now? Why do we care what this person has to say? Why isn't he facing indictment at this point? But nevertheless, he's praising Australia's efforts to so it's funny how, the failure, obviously the policies, these policies have failed, but Gates is still out there praising them, because obviously what Australia did is sort of what Bill Gates fantasizes about worldwide, I guess, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't understand, Tim. I mean, where is the memory of the public? I mean, I can remember back to the vaccines they're not going to do any much damage because they're just going to stay in your shoulder. Remember that?
Yes.
That was the first idea. And then it was, it's only a part of the virus. It's just this little spike protein. And so it's not going to be as strong a reaction, as the total virus, which of course then turned out to be completely false. All the science papers started coming out saying, this is the most pathogenic part of the virus, the spike protein. So that collapsed. And then they got into, the efficacy line where they said, it's sterilizing. It's, this is the end of it. You had the pundit saying, if you have it, you're just safe and you're not going to pass it along. Then you might get it, but you won't transmit it. Then that collapsed. But they said it's going to last long enough that we should at least be able to get herd immunity. Of course, this just fell by the boards. And now they went into this hospitalization and death reduction, which now is collapsing. When you look at the stats, like in the UK, places where the statistics are accurately given longitudinally, and there's just no difference. In fact, there's a slight negative for the vaccinated and the boost. And I am predicting that the next rollout of propaganda will be that it doesn't prevent, the vaccines don't prevent infection, hospitalization, or death, but when you die, you're more likely to go to heaven because
you did a good thing.
They have to move it back to the moral position, because all of the, just the facts on the ground are all just showing that the vaccine isn't.
According to the Pope, it's the Jesus would get the injection. So
sure he would.
It is a sacrament. It is a Latter-day sacrament now, getting the injection.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of it. Yeah, it is like a sacrament.
So you go to heaven if you get the injection. You go there faster because it's good to kill
you. Yeah, probably, no doubt about it. You probably take some time off of purgatory at least.
You're granted several indulgences or something.
Right? Yeah, so it's just they're in the cloud cuckoo land. The public, the fraction that buys it will buy anything, but I just think going back to the stats we brought up last week of the mainstream media's trust. The public's trust in it was at 10%, which was, lower than the public's belief in aliens walking among, the humanity. So
yes,
it's just as low as it can get.
Lizard alien people now outpoll the media. So
I just think we've won on almost all the issues. The mainstream media is just blossoming everywhere. There's just hundreds of new people coming forward with ideas. The idea that Joe Rogan is more popular than CNN is almost surrealistic. I was listening the other day that they were talking about whether or not he's considering a run for the White House.
Joe Rogan.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it's far-fetched, but Kamala Harris, So anything's possible in this era. But so all of these issues are behind us. The question is, in fact, there are a lot of nations that are still suffering. I mean, Australia and New Zealand are still locked down and they don't really have any way out. It'll be interesting to see if those slave states can actually or will be permitted to, come back.
Well, I think it's a good chance. I just turn on a dime, announcing it's all over,
Ireland was as bad as any of them, and they just turned on a dime without any announcements as to why. It was as if once, and I think that, and this is going to be interesting in Austria. So the Austrian, the mandate is very odd. They claim they're going to start enforcing it in March, but it isn't completely, slave state material, because you can buy your way out.
Yeah.
I think the current
price is a fine.
Yeah, there's a fine. And yeah. I believe that the current rate is 3,000 euros, which is, you know, chump change for someone who thinks that the vax is going to destroy their immune system. So, you know, I think this is just more intimidation. And between now and March, particularly if the Omicron collapse, you know, is in fact going to take place, I wouldn't be a bit surprised that all the people in Austria have to do is just continue to protest, riot, show that they won't put up with it. And I mean, what is the government going to do if, in fact, Czechoslovakia has done this and there are no ill effects to
the
nation?
Well, what if you're in Australia reading the news about these plans in the mother country, England, or the Commonwealth,
yeah,
canceling it? Or,
that's a good point. I mean,
you know, or
see, this is the thing. They had to have some kind of coordination on this, and you just scratch your head as to, well, what will happen now? Do you really think they can maintain in New Zealand and Australia a virtual slave state gulag, you know, anti-coronavirus policies if in the UK and Ireland it's completely free and the countries are blossoming, you know, economically, health wise? Yeah. I mean, it just seems like this is not really possible, that all that would do would just be to bring real civil war. I mean, people, I would think at that point would say, okay, we just can't believe anything other than the fact that we're entering into a slave state, so we have to fight.
Now, in Sweden, of course, Sweden's always a trendsetter, right? Right. What happens in Sweden coughs or sneezes and the world catches a cold, as they say. No, but anyway, I guess they have 9 million people in Sweden. Swedish government has established a new agency for the purpose of dispelling what they consider to be misinformation, apparently to help strengthen the Swedish population's psychological resilience against vulnerabilities in society. It's called the Psychological Defense Agency. Known as the Swedish Psychological Defense Agency, the department was launched on January 1st with the former Swedish ambassador to Abu Dhabi, Henrik Ladeholm, appointed as the director general. The apparent mission of the agency is the coordination and development of agencies and other actors and activities within Sweden's psychological defense, the purpose of which is to safeguard our open and democratic society, the free information of opinion, and Sweden's freedom of independence. The establishment of the agency comes, according to an information page on its new website, in response to undue information, influence, and other misleading information that's directed at Sweden or Swedish interests, both nationally and internationally. It is the express task of the agency to identify, analyze, and prevent such influence from supposedly misleading the Swedish public. The news agency, part of Sweden's Ministry of Justice, warned that when it deems misleading information can be a cause of anxiety, heightened hatred, and doubt, and make society more vulnerable. All that is very true, but the only problem is what constitutes misinformation? What is the dangerous information? Who are the sources of this information? Is it the government itself? Is it NGOs? Is it the media? These things. It's interesting enough because Sweden never locked down or had this response to it, and their death rate never exceeded the previous years. There's no really evidence of a pandemic in Sweden. But nevertheless, they seem to be announcing this program. Although the Swedish constitution technically guarantees the right to free expression and free speech, we all know that, you know, that isn't quite as solid as we think it is. Nevertheless, I don't think there's anything new. And these agencies exist in one form or another throughout the world. I mean, Britain has its military involved in psychological warfare, coordinating with the military. With the media to warp, shape the news in a certain direction. Obviously, you know, this MK Ultra has gone global. It's universal. It's sort of endemic, as they say now. It's all part of Hollywood and the media structure. But it's interesting they admit they have something with that title. You know, it's obviously this is a psychological warfare agency claiming to be defensive, you know, but obviously, you know, but it's an interesting admission nevertheless.
Yeah, I think the critical word in the statement the government released concerning the propaganda ministry is hatred. And I think that in Sweden's case, its purpose is not so much to keep people in the corona fear zone, but it's to prevent people thinking about the racial attack that's going on against Sweden.
Oh, weaponized migration, yeah.
Yeah, weaponized migration, because that's really what is starting to bubble up in Sweden. They're starting to realize that this was a deliberate attack against the Swedish people, and that the immigration has led to a real decrease in kind of cultural sanity on the streets of Sweden. And they can see that that there wasn't any reason at all to bring in these immigrants other than to breed Swedes out of existence.
Yeah, which there aren't many, right? I mean, it's very easy.
Right, very small, you know, yeah. And it's same thing's going on in Norway, you know. So yeah. The idea is just to put immigrants from North Africa into these areas.
Well, it's a natural mix, Joe.
Of course it is.
When I think Stockholm, I think, you know, Ghana or the Congo. Sure.
They have a lot to offer the Nordic brethren. So the whole thing is preposterous from any kind of, you know, what, economic or cultural kind of review. But it from the perspective of it's a deliberate racial attack that is for the purpose of just breeding the Swedes and the Norwegians, the Nordic people just out of existence.
Yeah, and also remember what Sweden has is it's a very homogeneous society, and they have the social welfare state. And Sweden, people think it's a socialist state, but really that's not correct. It's a mixed economy, and it's very corporate friendly. There's very low corporate taxes and very high personal income tax there. And this is all part of the social engineering plan that was pretty much introduced in the late 50s and 60s in Sweden, where sort of they were sort of the cutting edge of feminism in the 60s and 70s.
And yes, started, that's right.
Remember, you know, yeah. Really started to upset the natural, you know, sex roles in Swedish society. This led to lower birth rates in society itself. Also a much higher depression rate. I mean, they talk about psychological damage. A lot of it is done domestically to the Swedish population. There was an urbanization, modernization program in the 60s where Sweden up until the 60s was mostly rural. They started building these large block apartment complexes and moving people in from the small towns. That, from what I understand, an abysmal effect on Swedish culture. You mix into that maybe 20, 30 years later, weaponized migration, and that, you know, that's a recipe for, you know, I guess cultural and genetic suicide.
Yeah, and you can see the planning on the part of the oligarchs, because they bring in feminism, which reduces the birth rate, and then because they don't have any young people to come forward and correct numbers to work the economy, they go, well, we need to have immigration.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so one was designed to produce the other. You get rid of as many, potential mothers as possible. You put them in the camp of feminism and the workforce, and then you don't have an indigenous, you know, child population to come forward. Then they can say, well, we need our North African immigrants to keep us strong economically. But, you know, the right response would have been, well, why don't we encourage Swedish women to have more children? You know, mm-hmm. This would have certainly been a reasonable idea.
Well, Joe, that would be hatred.
You'd see exactly right. And this would have been defined as hatred by the Ministry of Propaganda that they now have. And that's what it's for. And I don't know. You know, you read this stuff and you go, gee, are the Swedes really so gullible? Is that kind of crude propaganda at this point will really keep anyone inside the sheep pen? And I doubt it. I really think that in Sweden and in Norway, there is a burgeoning independent media. People are bringing these ideas out. And because they are true, because in fact, that when the Swedes start considering what has happened to them culturally over the last 50 years, they'll realize how obviously true this is. And so the ones who are clear-minded, the ones who can see the obvious truth, they aren't going to be, you know, listening slack-jawed in amazement to what the Ministry of Propaganda tells them about don't be hating, you know, Africans. They're going to look past that to, well, who are bringing the Africans in and for what purpose? And as soon as the question is asked, it becomes obvious, and the Ministry of Propaganda can talk all they want. They're not going to get anywhere. And of course, it all, in my mind, is, you know, I do think they vaccinated, particularly those that are continuing to go forward with the boosters and whatnot, they are not going to be a virile component of civilization or culture going forward. So you're going to have a kind of purification. The people who refuse the vax, who are listening to the independent media, who recognize the propaganda, they're just going to become stronger and stronger as you go forward, right? I mean, it's almost inevitable. And there may be vastly fewer Swedes, but the ones that are left are going to be a tough little son of a gun. And so, you know, as far as I'm concerned, great. Let's get rid of all those that are, you know, have, because, you know, we have spent there's so much time wasted, energy wasted in talking among ourselves about what should be self-evident issues, right? There's nothing. I mean, it's like talking to someone in America who's in a woke consciousness state, right? There's nothing you can do with such an individual. The mind is shot. I've never seen anyone like that. Someone from someone who would buy into, you know, the Soros vision of America as being something positive, that you can do anything with. It's a waste of time. So don't spend time with them. Let's all just continue to move forward with the purification and just get to our senses so that we can resist.
Well, there was an indication that what might be confronting us post-COVID. This was international finance leaders hold war game exercise simulating global financial collapse. Should we be worried? Yeah. This is by Michael Nevrakadakis. High-level institutional banking officials and organizations gathered last month for a global war game exercise simulating the collapse of the global financial system. The tabletop exercise was reminiscent of Event 201, the pandemic simulation exercise that took place just before the COVID-19 entered the global scene. So here we have, again, a tabletop exercise of an economic collapse. Basically, high-level international banking officials and organizations last month gathered in Israel for that's an interesting place to gather in Israel for a global war game exercise simulating the collapse of the global financial system. The tabletop exercise was reminiscent of Event 201. The Collective Strength Initiative was held for 10 days, beginning on December 9th, 2021, at the Israeli Finance Ministry in Jerusalem. It was relocated to Jerusalem from Dubai World Expo over the concerns about the Omicron variant. Israel led a 10-country contingent that included treasury officials from U.S., Austria, Germany, Italy, Netherlands, Switzerland, Thailand, and United Arab Emirates. Representatives from the supranational organizations such as the International Monetary Fund, World Bank, and Bank of International Settlements also participated. Well, nothing could go wrong there, right? So they described a simulated war game exercise that the exercise sought to model the response to various hypothetical large-scale cyber attacks on the global financial system, including the leaking of sensitive financial data on the dark web, hacks targeting the global foreign exchange system, and subsequent bank runs and market chaos fueled by fake news. However, the main theme of the collective strength appears not so much the simulation of such a cyber attacks, but as the name of the initiative implies, the strengthening of global cooperation in cybersecurity and the financial sector, which I think somehow is going to result in what? Monitoring, digital currency, complete control. You know, instead of a health a green pass would be sort of a financial passport or something.
I mean, it's as clear as a bell. The financial collapse that they've engineered would be the rationale to create a social credit system and all digital currency, which can be monitored by a single, you know, investigative.
Well, here's an interesting worldwide. Yes, the idea of one measure was is. The idea of simulated delinking from major currencies raised some eyebrows because it's timing. On the same day, participants gathered to launch collective strength reports circulated that the Biden administration was considering removing Russia from the global electronic payment messaging system that is SWIFT, short for Society for the Worldwide International Banking, Society for the Worldwide International Financial Telecommunication. The measure would be part of the economic package sanctions the U.S. would levy against Russia should it attack Ukraine. Of course, yeah, the Biden administration is picking apart Russia over Ukraine. I'm sure every American worries about Ukraine. It's worth going to war over, right? It's just always on my mind is what those damn Ruskies are doing, like in Crimea or the Ukraine. I look at the map and I go, oh, wow, look, it's right. That's Russia's near frontier. It's almost, I used to think it was part of Russia. I think Crimea has been a part of Russia since 1783. Ukraine.
Yeah. Remember when the Ukraine came up a couple of years ago as an issue, we mentioned that that a whole zone of the Ukraine was always distinct legally from the rest of the Ukraine. It had been after World War II, Stalin included it in the Ukraine so that there would be native Russians to make sure there was no political force and autonomy for the Ukrainians. I mean, it was an evil act to put them in. It was done just for political gerrymandering on a geopolitical scale. But the fact is that they are always a separate legal zone. And they actually, when Putin had that, you know, confrontation a few years ago with the US, you know, he pointed out, look, this zone is different. And if they want to become part of Russia, they can. It's part of the UN charter of this zone. The Ukraine, let's face it, is just, you know, the suffering Ukrainians, God, the difficulty that these people have had. It's, you know, from the kulaks, the gulag, you know, the Holodomor, and then the slave state conditions, you know, in the 50s and 60s. And now it's just used as a, and the reason it's being used like this, I'm sure, is because it's the most controlled geography in the world for the oligarchs. They must have just absolute political.
Oh, the agricultural value of the Ukraine.
Whole thing to create these theatrical productions time after time.
Yeah.
It's all it is. It's just a theater to distract and perhaps to give a rationale. I mean, look, if the data on the vaccine genocide becomes transparent, you can't really do much about it, it's just out there, they will try to distract with some other, you know, like aliens landing or a kind of war with Russia or something, to move the public away from rage against the oligarchs, because, you know, that's just how they'll try to escape consequence of what they've done.
Yeah, and it could be it's a risky distraction, given the fact that, you know, Russia is a nuclear power. I like to think that overall that there's control of it, so that it doesn't go that far. There's no, if you look at something like the Ukraine, there's no ideological coherence or philosophical, moral consistency or ideological coherence, because if you look at, you know, Ukraine is back in 2014. You had the Jewish neocons like Victoria Nuland saying F the EU, and they're supporting Nazis in the Ukraine to undermine the pro-Russian government. Now, so you have Jews supporting Nazis in the Ukraine undermining the Russian government. Now, how are they doing that? Because you have these people who identify as Nazis, or they're called Nazis. This gets back to Ukrainian history, because many people, the Ukrainians, when the Germans invaded in 1941 and they entered Ukraine, they received their Germans as liberators from the Jewish Bolsheviks, who had killed millions in the Ukraine the years prior, just the years in the 1930s. So many people joined the SS battalions and these things. So you had this faction which was pro-Nazi or pro-German because they were anti-Russian. They assumed as being anti-Russian because the Jewish Bolsheviks were identified as Russians by the Ukrainians. So you had that ethnic conflict going on there, and that's being exploited as late as 2014 when the U.S. went in and they staged a color revolution and they overthrew the pro-Russian government, installed a pro-NATO Zionist government, Yatsenyuk, and that corrupt government is still there. But still, the eastern part of the Ukraine is very Russian. They speak Russian mostly, and so you have that. But I'm looking at the same thing. You saw it even in the Caucasus in the 1990s and the aughts, where U.S. intelligence agencies were supporting radical Muslims to destabilize Russia, and it's in its near abroad. So again, supposedly fighting a war on terror, but we're supporting radical Islam. The same thing with ISIS in Serbia. ISIS in Syria, where in Syria, ISIS was good. Outside Syria, they were bad, and they were getting support from the Israelis and also NATO. And same thing with Libya, when Muslim radicals were supported to upend the Gaddafi government in Libya, so that government could be plundered. Again, it's a great distraction, but you look at, there's no ideological, philosophical, or moral consistency. What you can see is just a group of people, of neocons, who are hell-bent on destabilization, weakening these countries, robbing these countries blind, not caring at all about the human consequences on the ground. And that might just give us an indication on what they're doing domestically to the United States.
The only concern they have is just how quick they can depopulate. That's the only standard mm-hmm. that these people have. You know, Thursday, the U.S. made the declaration that, you know, unvaccinated truckers can't come in from Canada and Mexico.
Yeah.
Well, you know, given our supply chain problems already at the ports, this is going to create, you know, a diminution. I mean, who knows what percentage of truckers? I mean, in Canada, I think most of them be vaccinated, but I don't know. You know, they're having this huge protest led by the truckers in Canada right now. Mm-hmm. And in Mexico, I don't have good data, but my anecdotal information is that well over half of them are not vaccinated. So
it wasn't that you don't have to be vaccinated, but if you're not, you have to quarantine for 14 days, which for a trucker is quite a.
But my point is just that. So you're going to have reduction in the food that comes to the U.S.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what the purpose of all this is. Okay. Well, you know, food also comes in through the ports, and that's of course at almost, you know, at a crawl at this point. People can see the empty shelves in grocery stores. They're starting to become visible. There's Biden's Wela to describe a grocery store with nothing to sell. Okay, this all looks to me like we're heading toward the great, you know, population reduction effort. And so, you know, the Ukraine, war with Russia, aliens landing, I mean, all of these things will be given to the public as, you know, don't pay attention to the fact that there's no food. We have been able to see this coming for years, that this would be, you know, at some point one of the depopulation components. And so now they are going to attempt this. And what's interesting is that, you know, the idea of the vaccines being effective is almost impossible to claim with a straight face. And at the same time, the so-called Omicron variant has now peaked and will have a real steep, according to the computer models, infectious rate as it goes forward. So there just isn't any real reason for this this policy, I mean, other than to reduce food into the U.S. So point being, it would be a real good time to look at your food supply a little bit and try to figure out, well, you know, what can we count on locally to get us through, you know, a tough year or so? Because it looks to me like this will be the policy going forward, is just to continue to reduce how food can be produced. You know, they're just going to get at all these different ways that food gets to us and just slow them down enough so that first we get hungry and then slowly we starve.
Now, this is all, again, we're seeing evidence of systemic collapse and or demolition. Maybe it's a better way to look at it. We had a story this last week. It was one of these high profile stories because of its details. Is in Los Angeles, a UCLA grad student, Brianna Kupfer, who was working in a high-end furniture store, was stabbed to death by reportedly a homeless man, identified as Sean Laval Smith. At least he stands accused of that. And the video seems to confirm that it indeed was him. He walked in apparently and stabbed this young lady to death for no particular reason. Again, we're getting a lot of these stories of this apparently random street crime, which is sort of a function of policies that have been, I guess, implemented in the past couple years, and also sort of the progressive policies that we see that these various states. It's interesting, kind of the story is that she's working alone in the store. This guy walks in. He is black and rather big. And she apparently sent a text message that said that she had bad vibes from this guy. And I found it interesting that in that generation, instead of when you feel threatened, you text about it, you don't leave. So yeah, she has the time to text to express her fears to, I guess, a friend, but doesn't have the good sense to maybe extricate herself from the situation. And she's killed for it. I can almost imagine her almost texting as she's being stabbed, saying, "I'm being stabbed. Ow, ow, ow." You know, I don't know. But nevertheless, if she had sent this text message out and Mr. Smith had decided maybe to just leave and complained about his treatment, she would have been called a racist and, or maybe a Karen. And just another example, again, where people are being robbed of the ability to defend themselves, even the psychological ability to defend themselves. Of course, this Mr. Smith has a very long career as a criminal, as a long rap sheet. He should have been in prison a long time ago and should have been out on the streets, but yet he's a beneficiary of these progressive policies of releasing people and not even having bail for them, just release them out on the street again. And as a result of this, she's dead. We have a lot of other streak going on. So again, one of these things where I can just see her saying at this text messages and her friend saying, "OMG, that's so racist," right? Another thing, signs of societal collapse, is you sent me the story about Union Pacific Rail in LA.
Yeah.
These train robberies where these freight trains are being looted and there's no one's doing anything about it. And in fact, they're talking about trying to bypass LA now. The Union Pacific sent a complaint to the district attorney there, who is again a George Soros installed district attorney, George Gascon, who is very proud of his progressive policies. And also, I sent you that link to the Tucker Carlson piece on the collapse of civilization.
And that was great. Kind of show that Carlson did. I don't trust him. He comes from a CIA family, but man, you sure get some clear-minded stuff out of him when he talks. And he was pointing out that all of this had been deliberately created.
Mm-hmm.
And he in the show he did, he really showed clearly how these the homeless encampments and the lack of a sort of civilization that would prevent the trains from being looted en masse, because these aren't individual capers. I mean, it's not like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. I mean, you're talking about mobs.
Not as charming either. No.
No, it's more like The Walking Dead.
It's not Redford and Newman.
No. I mean, it's the Walking Dead. I mean, it's hordes of fentanyl addicts who don't care if they live or die, really. I mean, from the videos I've seen, they're just staggering. And when the trains slow down, they just leap on and then just start throwing, all of with the online businesses now being so prevalent, there's all these Amazon cartons and they throw them out and then they just go through them looking for things that they can sell or of value. And you have and Carlson showed the images of this. Mm-hmm. the depot, the train depot, are just literally awash in opened Amazon shipping containers. And
yeah, there's so much debris. I was thinking this would cause a derailment.
Jeez. Yeah, and that's right. I mean, the letter that the Union Pacific, I think it was the CEO, sent to Los Angeles was just hilarious. He said, "We really agree with your social progressive policies.
Yeah,
but we can't really run a railroad if every train is swarmed over by the living dead and like everything is taken out of it. So we may have to bypass Los Angeles." Now, Tim, this is pretty funny because, I mean, you think about like the foreshadowing films like Escape from LA, Escape mm-hmm. from New York, Carpenter stuff. I mean, if you are claiming to be a first world city, but the railroads refuse to come into you, there seemingly is a contradiction. You see my point?
Well, I think the solution is a railroad to hire Snake Plissken.
Yeah, well, that's so it is really going to be
with the eye patch,
wild west scenario. But unfortunately, I think most of the railroads are owned by Buffett, and he's obviously manipulating the situation for depopulation, just like all the other oligarchs. So I think LA, you know, the future is grim. And I really thought Carlson was useful in his show, where he started talking about how obvious the attack on civilization was.
Yeah, they basically through incentives, right? Through the incentive structure. Yeah.
But he was saying he said that, you know, you could trace a lot of it to one particular event where, you know, a homeless person was in Boise, and a huge law firm, it was a left-wing Democratic-controlled law firm, defended him.
Latham and Watkins, which is a Wall Street
law firm. And so they were able to get the laws changed so that, well, there was a rationale for the police departments to stand down. And then, of course, this has led to the autonomous zone, where civilization is told to stand down.
The lawsuit was spearheaded by Latham and Watkins in conjunction with the Boise Legal Aid Society. And if you look at some of these organizations, these legal aid societies are downstream from some of these NGOs and foundations that are funded by guys like George Soros. This is almost not the ACLU, but the other one.
Poverty Law.
All these out. Yeah, these are outfits that fund these operations, and they'll give these little groups that agitate, and they sue, and they through litigation, through lawsuits, they deprive, localities or cities or states from having proper police laws to maintain civilization. So they're decivilizing these places through litigation and through a court system. They're claiming they're helping the homeless and constitutional rights. And in fact, with those, they're creating more homeless. That's what Dr. Tucker Carlson.
Carlson pointed that out. And, you know, it's just so funny when you think about like Southern Poverty Law or like the Soros NGOs, they talk about the plight of the homeless. Do you think any of them have ever gone down to Skid Row and tried to help any of these people out? I mean, this is obviously just the rationale to destroy the civilization that is on the other side of Skid Row.
Now, why would Latham and Watkins want to do that as a law firm? Is it because they're woke? Are they woke? Is a Wall Street law firm woke?
Yeah, that's right. They're woke, and the point is it is an attack against, you know, what can be generally called European culture.
Yeah. Is George Soros woke?
The woke consciousness is in and of itself just, I mean, it's ludicrous. It can't possibly be, articulated as a philosophy or a political concept. It really is just crazed and mentally ill people who are being funded by those that want to destroy European culture. It's just all that it is.
At one level, it is either crazy or misguided progressive liberal policies. You have true believers at the middling level of these things, and they just do what they do. But nevertheless, in that piece, he does cite specific programs. Thing is Seattle. Has I guess estimated 12,000 homeless, but nevertheless, Seattle has taken money from its money provided COVID relief package to pay for a new luxury apartment building for the homeless. It costs $300,000 per unit. Similar program in Los Angeles, high rise luxury apartments for the homeless. Now these are going to house a statistically insignificant amount of the homeless. Nevertheless, in that piece he cites that the governments are paying market rate for these places. What's the market rate? Well, the market is what the government's willing to pay for it. And this is an old scam. HUD did this for years where, you know, people pointed out that if HUD renovated or repaired existing properties, you could do it at a fraction of the cost of new units. Nevertheless, HUD built new units. Now, who was making money on that? The contractors who bribe HUD officials to do this. So you have that scam going on. Now, I suspect a similar program is going on in Seattle and Los Angeles. But above that, I think what you have here is, which is what, you know, these like a legal aid society getting, you know, a couple $1 million from another foundation, gets money from the Open Society Foundation, George Soros' outfit is. They are the same way that George Soros funded these down ballot candidates and DAs. They install progressive, incompetence in these DA positions, so they don't prosecute crimes. You see this in Manhattan, you see it in St. Louis, you see it in Chicago, you see it in LA, is you can produce a lot of mayhem and chaos in these areas, which at the end of the game, causes real estate values to drop, which then enable you to come in at some point, which is why maybe Latham and Watkins, which represents Wall Street, some hedge fund or some asset holding company like BlackRock's going to come in and profit off this in the long run. And you're going to see this sort of this is a color revolution that you see going on from state to state. And this has been going on for decades in the United States. I mean, years ago, police departments and local governments were deprived of the ability of their police powers to maintain public decency by declaring vagrancy laws unconstitutional, all under the cover of civil rights. Lawyers Guild, which is a communist Jewish front, litigating these things. And again, at the same time, they're depriving the state's ability or the city's ability to limit pornography or obscenity laws and these things. So it's a civilizational takedown, is what you're saying. And the same way
These guys don't walk down the streets of the autonomous zone.
No.
See a fentanyl victim, spread eagle in the gutter with no clothes on, and say to themselves, you know what this individual needs is a 3-bedroom condo with a view of the space needle. Right?
That's going to solve the problem. Yes.
Yeah. this is not this is not something that happens in the real world. In the Carlson show, which I recommend people watch, you sent me a link to it so I could see it. It's like, I presume people can get this, but the videos, Tim, of the car driving down the length of what used to be Skid Row, but is now, downtown LA, and it just goes on forever. I mean, the people who live in the suburbs don't realize just how catastrophic.
It's 50 city blocks, Soros, I think. It extends 50 just blocks.
The Soros DA stand down on civilization has been. And so when you look at food is going to be reduced. The vaccine is not going to help any of these people. I wouldn't be surprised if some of them are taking it. I mean, all of those people in the homeless encampment, they'll be the first ones to die. They're obviously all just on the chopping block. I doubt if really many of them will be alive in 2 or 3 years, because the policies are not designed, as Carlson pointed out very clearly, the policies are not designed to help them. The policies are designed to expand the fentanyl brigade into the largest component in these cities, because that the fact is that in and of itself will destroy the city.
Well, at the same time, they're pouring billions into homeless projects in California. The lockdowns which destroyed businesses, which is a source of real revenue. So they're encouraging people to be bums, but they're penalizing people who own businesses and drive them out of business, restaurants and these things.
Sure.
That's clear.
The program.
Yeah. At the same time, you have just recently, I think it was Gavin Newsom announced that the he's going to have a program to provide health care for all, even illegal aliens in California. And the city, the state's bankrupt. In New York, they announced that you don't have to be a citizen to be able to vote in local elections. What are they doing there? Obviously, they're trying to create a situation which is ungovernable. Now, who profits from that?
Yeah.
Who benefits from that? Well, it's not the people.
It's not just ungovernable, but it's on its way to zero population, because. Yeah. The autonomous zone, I had he was someone who listened to our show, and he would go to the autonomous zone that was set up a couple of years ago in Seattle and then put on the iPhone, and I could see what was going on. And as you walk through it, you could see that this was really just it was a mortuary, that there were people who were on their way to dying everywhere, right? It's a zone of death. I mean, these the people who are into fentanyl addiction are not, they can't really be helped. They're just, they're being euthanated. And I think that this death zone is just going to expand out and engulf the whole city. I mean, you know, the idea, I mean, the scam that they ran time after time, where they drove out the middle class, bought the real estate on a dime, and then when business came back in, that they could sell it and make money. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of going to be hard to work this time, because there won't be enough population returning it, at least not for a long, long time.
Yeah.
So I think that it's more Georgia Guidestone than real estate scam. I think that the goal at this point is to reduce population, and that's the long-term goal, and the short-term goal is to distract the public from the genocide. So there'll be, and of course, that's part of what goes on with the fentanyl brigade, you know, because when you have these kinds of problems facing the middle class, they aren't really able to focus on the larger picture of, well, how did this get created? I mean, they had the woman who was killed in Los Angeles. Carlson had a video of the father talking about it. And it was very articulate and heartfelt. And he was talking about, you know, all of these things that are going on wrong politically and how that all led up to the death of his daughter. And he's right on all these things. But he doesn't see the possibility that this is the success of a program. He's still in this idea that, you know, the left trying to create socialism is misguided, and because of that you have episodes like the death of my daughter. You know, it's not misguided, Tim. It's perfectly well guided, and it's just that people have to come to the understanding that, you know, the world is a genocide factor at this point, and you have to think clearly, which starts with that understanding, because then you can not waste time with issues which are just distractions and just get down to, you know, food, security, ethnic protection, things like that, that are just absolutely critical for the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think what you're dealing with is, I think it's called macro corruption, and basically is the high level elite, crimes that are being committed. And when they're doing that, they want to, the micro corruption or the street crime is necessary to provide enough cover or distraction. Otherwise, people notice what they're doing. A while back, I cited a Ron News article about California, about the elite in California, particularly these Jewish families that were able to come in the 1940s and 50s and take over California. And a lot of the progressive policies of the 1960s and 70s in the article, he says, may have been introduced to distract from their high-level plundering. And he says, he said there was a disturbing possibility, you know, that this was going on, which is why someone like Henry Bazelon, who was a corrupt judge, federal judge, who was part of this criminal establishment in California, would become a liberal, bleeding heart liberal, as sort of a cover for this stuff. And they benefit from the street crime, because the street crime gets everyone's attention. And you have someone like Breonna Kupfer's father sort of dismayed and criticizing the policies, but not saying that overall there's a strategy. This is, you know, the crime that took his daughter's life is a necessary function of the macro crime that's being committed. And so, you know, they're going to institute these policies that create chaos on the street crime and these things in order to be able to get away with what they're doing. And whatever occurs on the street, it's either part of the plan or it's collateral damage. And so be it. We're dealing with, in the Ron Unz article, he talks about, let me see if I can cite it here. Yeah, I don't think that this analysis is nearly implausible as it might seem. First consideration, over the past few decades, the bulk of the American population has become totally impoverished, with published reports by the Federal Reserve and other organizations indicating that 60% of the population have less than $1,000 in available savings, with 40% lacking even $400. Only a generation or so ago, perfectly good college educations were so inexpensive that many students could cover most of their costs through a part-time job. Yet today, accumulated student debt is over $1.5 trillion, with any bankruptcy discharge legally prohibited. The gigantic looming burden has created an entire young generation of permanent debt slaves who find it financially impossible to get married or purchase their first home. American healthcare is the most expensive and inefficient in the developed world, and these costs impose a huge parasitic burden upon the rest of our economy, as well as raising the serious risk that little bad luck might permanently damage the finances of an ordinary family. While most ordinary Americans have become much poorer, a tiny financial elite has increased its wealth beyond all comprehension. During the 1950s and early 1960s, American candidates and campaigns regularly focused upon economic issues, and this sort of extreme economic divergence would certainly have been at the center of most political campaigns. But these days, our politics has instead become dominated by highly divisive social issues of much less practical significance, the latest example being an astonishing focus on transgender rights, which impacts the tiniest sliver of the population, would have been universally ridiculed as pure political satire just a few years ago. Is it so far-fetched to suggest that these issues have been deliberately promoted as popular distractions, lightning rods to divert attention from simple reality that most people have grown poorer, even while our ruling elites have vastly multiplied their wealth? So I think it's an important insight to see when understand like something like the Tucker Carlson piece, which shows the perverse incentives that progressive crazy liberals do when they're given access to other people's money. And there have been many books written about this in the past 40 years. I remember Charles Murray's Losing Ground about the welfare state, very good analysis of this. There was Wealth and Poverty by George Gilder. He wrote about this, explained all this, the perverse incentives of the welfare state and its effects on the culture, people who were the recipients of this stuff. But a lot of that is, again, is focused on the fact that these are perverse incentives. And it's just the consequence of bad ideas. But I do think that it's being weaponized. And I don't know how you can look in the context of the Great Reset and how the people of the world of Davos view humanity. Like you're suggesting, this could be a prelude to some sort of mass die-off or genocide. They do talk about, you know, you have the Georgia Guidestones. You do have books like What the Future Doesn't Need Us. And there's sort of this the transhumanist agenda, which you saw with the Great Reset, where they actually look at the population as a surplus. They don't need the labor anymore. At least they don't think they need the labor anymore. So they're killing it off gradually, poisoning, introducing toxins into the environment with drugs and pharmaceuticals and just the poisons, the food supply. I do think it's interesting. Last week I did a show on the opioid epidemic and its effect on the white population of the country. In the past, drug epidemics have been sort of restricted to the ghetto, to minorities, and the opioid epidemic has taken a significant toll on America's middle America white population, and I think it's interesting that epidemic would be unleashed on the country in the late 1990s by Purdue Pharma and other pharmaceutical companies, and by the FDA and CDC at the very time the country's elite decided to sort of pull out of America, complete the deindustrialization, ship manufacturing overseas, largely capitalized and funded with money that was reportedly embezzled out of HUD or out of the Pentagon budget to finance the development of China. So when they do that, they shift the manufacturing overseas for cheaper labor, re-import it back in, load the country down with debt. It almost appears to be like it was a leveraged buyout of the country. And that's the bigger picture. I mean, that's what we're seeing. Yeah, and I'm looking at the Tucker piece, what's happening there. Yeah. It's part of that process. I can't, so.
I agree. I mean, I think that the most seminal moment is the authoritarian personality, where you get the beginning of the counterculture, and from there you get the woke consciousness. I mean, you just go to chapter 23, you can see that they're going to assemble all available psychological science to create a propaganda based on Eros that will then becomes MK Ultra and then becomes the counterculture, which out of which feminism, woke consciousness, all of this stuff spreads. And then when you get to the opioid epidemic, you have the Sackler family, Jewish oligarchs that I'm sure are related back to the American Jewish Committee that put out the authoritarian personality, right, with the proud declaration of what they were going to do. And then you can actually, there are all sorts of connections into the Rothschild world and, of course, George Soros, who is a Rothschild puppet creation. I mean, he's a fake financial wizard. They promoted his wealth so that he could then use it to destroy European culture with, as far as I'm concerned. This is his background. And so all of these things are, you know, you can kind of see back to the plan that was organized around the authoritarian personality and the psychological sciences to break down historical, ethnic, and religious structures and end up with, you look at the graduate from college today, a quasi male with a 30% of normal sperm, a degree in transgenderism, and $200,000 in debt, which you just have to wonder how he's ever going to pay back, given his degree in transgender feminism, whatever. I mean, what does that have as an economic power? And so that individual is just massively confused and damaged, but this is not, his fault. It's been this long process, wherein culture just has been wrecked. And this poor individual, went to a school where, they were even at a very early age promoting a homosexual agenda, blurring of sexual identity. European ethnicity was evil, right? White mm-hmm. supremacist racism, all this stuff. Well, this is our world. We have been attacked. We're still standing, but we are taking blow after blow. And the basic problem is we don't have the clarity of mind about the attack so we can fight back. However, let's hope it's changing because, independent media just gets out more and more facts, more and more questions about the rationale that they're giving us. And, as far as I'm concerned, the future has never been brighter in the last 70 years than it is at this moment, not because we haven't taken these blows, not because, our bodies aren't ravaged by all the toxicity, not that our culture, our ethnicity is under attack. But the fact is, at least now, there is some truth that is coming to the surface. And this is all we need. We just need to have clarity of mind so we can think about our world in a correct way.
Yeah. Again, being aware and conscious of, course, you mentioned the American Jewish Committee, the authoritarian personality. That was 1950.
Yeah.
So this is 72 years now they've been openly doing this.
And look at how much progress that we have made with their psychological approach to the workers' paradise. Look at the video that Carlson showed of the miles of homelessness. Yes. And think about what is inside the souls of these individuals. Well, I'll tell you, Tim, it's nothing. They have been eviscerated as being human beings. They are not humans anymore. They are just, protoplasm waiting for the last heartbeat. Look at the train yards, for mm-hmm. God's sake. I mean, the trains can't even come down the tracks through all the litter of what the Walking Dead have stolen out of the cargo mm-hmm. hole.
And you can't defend yourself from it because if you do try to defend your community from these from these orcs, if you will, or just zombies. If you have an altercation with them and you defend yourself, there's a good chance and you win that altercation, you'll spend the rest of your life in jail,
so you have to think clearly about if you're going to defend yourself, you have to do it in a very particular way with an awareness of how the legal structure is set up and the different things you need to do to make sure that the defense is successful.
Yeah, I mean, the system is so hostile. I mean, the fact that Kyle Rittenhouse, although he was acquitted, had to go through that just for simply defending his community from rioters that had the sanction of the state because the state stood down, and that's the real crime there. And or the case where with the McMichaels in Georgia, where they're railroaded into a life sentence for murder. Yeah. Obviously, very it wasn't that because they were defending their community from crime.
I think that's key. The key is community. If you want to defend yourself against this attack, you can't do it as an individual. You can't do it walking down the street with a handgun or something like this. This is not going to get you anywhere. Like you say, you'll just be arrested for mm-hmm. whatever you do in jail. You have to do it by establishing a community that defends itself as a community. that you put in a sheriff who actually has the capacity to take mm-hmm. dangerous bums and get them the hell out of there, right? That has appropriate defense of our having, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Well, here's the funny thing is the only, you can only get like, say, the niceties of rule of law and procedure if you have what is something close to a homogeneous community. Once you have a diverse or heterogeneous community, it becomes such low trust that you need an authoritarian state to maintain any order. A good example is the way that New York maintained law and order, particularly on Manhattan, was through basically a soft police state, where police would simply look at someone, you don't belong here, get out of here, and they'd go. Now, that's not strictly constitutional, but it maintained law and order. If you're going to have that type of environment, and that's why cities have to be always have to be somewhat authoritarian if they mix everyone together. Whereas you can only have, again, you have high trust, and this goes against sort of the cult of integration and diversity. But diversity is a trick anyway, because all diversity is there to deprive you of the agency, the identity to pursue and defend your interest in the name of, you know, some fantasy which never really occurs. It's a trick. And it's a con. So it's not about what they say it is about. You know, so
if someone comes on and like, you know, gets in your face about, well, you know, you're not promoting diversity, tell them to go to Israel and to like help a little diversity for the Palestinians.
Well, yeah,
right.
Well, yeah,
how about that for diversity? If you're so into this diversity thing, what happened there? You go there and you show us diversity. You bring that group that was there before you guys set up Zionism, move them into your political class, give them real human rights. And you know what? We'll talk to you at that point.
Yeah.
At the moment, it sure smells like hypocrisy to me.
Yep. So, okay, Joe.
Tim, every week you just scratch your head and wonder what the hell the world will be like in 7 days. I don't know, brother, but I know we'll be back, huh?
Well, like I said, the world's... world's a troubled, confused place, but I guess it makes shows like this possible. So there you go.
That's right. It asked. Right. So there it is. Anyway, Tim, thank you. I'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, enjoy the rest of your weekend. Bye-bye.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.